Residents continue to share stories of Russian occupation in recently freed Ukrainian cities.
The Russians stripped my husband to his underwear here on the street. One had to undress completely. They look at you, turn you around, look for any scars, tattoos. Whether one served or not, they took people. It was horror here.
Plus, Ukrainian forces continue making advances as Russian forces withdraw.
Heavy fighting are continuing in the Donbas region. We do not hear any information about any advances, both from Ukrainian or Russian side.
And later in the program, how an American riding across Ukraine is raising awareness globally. Today is Wednesday, September 14th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. As Russian forces retreat, Ukraine's military is keeping the pressure on. Its counteroffensive is pressing deeper into occupied territory. From the Associated Press, Ben Thomas is up first.
A Ukrainian airborne assault trooper in Kharkiv saying the Russians were running like mice, abandoning vehicles and even comrades. Ukraine's border guard says the army has taken control of Vovchansk, a town just 2 miles from Russia, seized on the first day of the war. Russian troops are also pulling out of the southern city of Melitopol, heading toward Crimea. That's according to the city's pre-occupation mayor, a claim the AP has not been able to verify yet. Back in Kharkiv, this man tells Sky News he expects Russian airstrikes to continue, focused on cutting water, electricity, and creating chaos. But he says they'll survive, and in his words, Putin will soon croak. I'm Ben Thomas.
In exclusive reporting by Reuters News, Russian President Vladimir Putin's chief envoy on Ukraine told a Russian leader, as the war was beginning, that he had struck a provisional deal with Kyiv that would satisfy Russia's demand that Ukraine stay out of NATO. But Putin rejected it and pressed ahead with his military campaign. Now, that's according to three individuals close to the Russian leadership who were speaking with Reuters News. The Ukrainian-born envoy, Dmitry Kozak, told Putin, according to the Reuters report, that he believed the deal he had hammered out removed the need for Russia to pursue a large-scale occupation of Ukraine. Putin had repeatedly asserted prior to the war that NATO and its military infrastructure were creeping closer to Russia's borders by accepting new members from Eastern Europe, and that the alliance was now preparing to bring Ukraine into its orbit as well. Putin publicly said that that represented an existential threat to Russia, forcing him to react. Asked about the Reuters findings, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said that is absolutely no relation to reality. No such thing ever happened. It is absolutely incorrect information. In a call with reporters on Wednesday, Peskov said that Ukraine's ongoing ambitions to join the Western NATO military alliance presented a threat to Russia's security and highlighted the necessity for Russia to conduct what it is continuing to call a special military operation in Ukraine. Elsewhere, while delivering remarks at the European Parliament, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that sanctions on Russia are having a real impact and that they are there to stay, as is EU support.
It is about autocracy against democracy. And I stand here with the conviction that with the necessary courage and with the necessary solidarity, Putin will fail and Ukraine and Europe will prevail.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky also toured some of the cities recently freed from Russian forces. In Balaklia, he told soldiers that he met there, quote, that they were absolute heroes to stay safe, that the people of Ukraine, the children, your children, and your grandchildren will never forget, end quote. Reuters' Lisa Bernhard now takes things from here.
Newly freed from Russian occupation, residents of Balaklia, Ukraine, in the Kharkiv province, wept as they received humanitarian aid on Tuesday, their city newly reclaimed and liberated by Ukrainian troops after what some described as months of horror. With Ukraine's flag flying in the city once again, people clamored for supplies and spoke of all they endured.
The Russians stripped my husband to his underwear here on the street. One had to undress completely. They look at you, turn you around, look for any scars, tattoos. Whether one served or not, they took people. It was horror here.
One local resident said she wept when she saw Ukrainian armored vehicles drive victoriously through the city.
I could not believe my eyes. We knew that it was very hard to take our town. There are bridges all around. You can't approach it. The Russians had Grad missiles on all sides of town. They were shooting all the time. Many of us still jump up from the sounds of hissing or explosions. I dropped the cup and my cats hid away. All of us are stressed. I look into the mirror and I realize that we got older.
But some paid the ultimate price for freedom. This woman's son died in gunfire as the Russians were fleeing.
I screamed so that the whole Balaclia could hear. I thought the sky would break. I screamed at Putin. I cursed this war. I cursed Putin. But no one will give me my son back.
Others who survived live with the memory of being jailed in this small cell, shown to Reuters by a Ukrainian police officer.
People made marks on the walls, how many days they spent here. As you see, there are marks on the wall.
They carved prayers on the walls as well. Since the beginning of September, Ukrainian troops have recaptured dozens of towns in a stunning shift in battleground momentum. Now, Ukraine has set its sights on freeing all territory occupied by invading Russian forces, and there are indications of more U.S. military aid on the way to back Ukraine's mission.
Lisa Bernhard reports for Reuters News. Zelensky also visited Izum and commented on the destruction that he witnessed.
The view is very shocking, but it's not shock for me because we began to see the same pictures from Bucha, from the first deoccupied territories. So the same, destroyed buildings, killed people, and so what can I say? That is the part of our real history. And the part of modern today's Russian nation. Yeah, that they did it. Only them.
Joining us from Kyiv with more on the recently freed cities and Zelensky's visits is reporter Anna Chernikova.
I was just talking to the guys who are originally from Izum, and they were staying there for quite a long time. Now they're back to check their house and how it is doing. What they've told me that a Russian army was actually based in their house. They had a two-story house. Now it is almost destroyed. Their neighbors who were staying in Izum for the whole time of occupation were saying that when Russian forces were withdrawing, they actually shelled their house one more time, and this actually destroyed a big part of the first floor. Second floor was destroyed previously. Well, what they're saying as well, that a lot of mines are around the town and a lot of mines are inside the house and on the territory of the private sector. Of course, civilians are not yet allowed to walk freely around very carefully. So they had just a chance to come to their house to check the state. Almost all the all their personal belongings, including clothes and washing machines and wardrobes, are gone. So they're saying that nothing is left. Also, they found a lot of stuff from other people on the territory of their house, and something like safe boxes, which are empty, and also the garage is empty. And in this garage, they had also a lot of their stuff when they left. So basically, they are saying that 80% of the city, and this was also confirmed by the Ukrainian officials, is destroyed. There are no bridges left, and only one bridge was quickly restored quickly for the President Zelensky visit. It's a walking bridge. So for the moment, Ukrainian soldiers are creating these pontoon bridges over the river, so people can actually go to the other side of the city, because the city of Zoom is divided by the Seversky Donetsk river, river. In general, connection is still very problematic, but Ukrainian soldiers are going around the town with Starlink systems, and this makes possible for people to get in touch with their relatives and make calls via internet connection. For the moment, also, we're hearing that a lot of humanitarian organizations from all over the world, including Ukrainian, are coming to Izum and to other cities in the Kharkiv region and villages that were liberated recently. So in terms of the products and first aid help, situation is getting much better.
Anna, thank you very much for sharing those stories. Turning to the ongoing fighting, there have been reports of renewed shelling in the city of Mykolaiv. What do we know about what happened there, as well as what is being reported by Ukrainian authorities as their counteroffensive continues?
According to the official information and to the confirmed information from the Ukrainian side, heavy fighting are continuing in the Donbas region. We do not hear any information about any advances, both from Ukrainian or Russian side. Again, Ukrainian officials are not, you know, giving a lot of details while operation is ongoing. The city of Mykolaiv was under very heavy shelling over the night. According to the mayor of the city, a lot of civilian residential areas were damaged. We don't have information about victims or wounded people, and also the information about the damages is being clarified. So for the moment, I don't have any particular numbers. But also during the day today, it was two air raid sirens that covered the whole territory of Ukraine. They happened one after the another, so just 3 minutes difference between them. And during this air alarm, the city of Kryvyi Rih was shelled. We know that explosion was heard, and this was confirmed by the mayor of the town, but of the city. But for the moment, no information. Actually, this city, the city of Kryvyi Rih, is a hometown of President Zelensky, and this shelling happened right after his visit of the Kharkiv region.
Reporting for us from Kyiv, Ukraine, Anna Chernikova. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
To learn more about what's taking place each day, visit voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. As Russia faces further isolation from the West after its invasion of Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin is meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Uzbekistan. The meeting will serve as a measure of how strong the cooperation is between the two countries. Marcus Harden narrates this report from VOA's Moscow Bureau.
Samarkand, the ancient Uzbek city that once linked the Mediterranean with China through the Silk Road, is the scene of a meeting that is full of geopolitical nuances. This city, this week, will host the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit, where Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping will meet for the first time since Russia invaded Ukraine. Russia has looked to China for relief from international sanctions and wants to strengthen its ties with Beijing. But it's an unequal relationship. Some analysts say China sees Russia as a political partner, not an economic one.
What is the volume of trade between Russia and China? This is the best partner of Russia, isn't it? $143 billion. What is the volume of trade between China and the United States? And they are adversaries, but it is $700 billion.
Russia may not be China's largest trading partner, but Beijing now represents Moscow's largest political partner.
на сегодняшний день геополитические позиции.
In terms of geopolitical affairs, Russia and China share similar views on the West and the Asia-Pacific region.
В Европе, так и в Азиатско-Тихоокеанском регионе.
They also have an adversarial relationship with the United States.
И у Китая, и у России.
Russia and China have got an important common opponent, the United States of America, whose relations with Russia are completely spoiled and are consistently deteriorating with China. That naturally makes Russia and China closer to each other.
This is the Chinese leader's first trip outside his country since the start of the COVID crisis, and the decision to hold the meeting in Uzbekistan highlights the area's strategic importance.
Central Asia is also a transit region. This is the first point. Secondly, there are China's real economic interests. That is quite clear. But you know, I would say that the Chinese are a sort of philosophers of politics. They perfectly realize anyway that Central Asia will never escape their influence.
With Russia isolated from the West and China striking a difficult political balance between politics and business, Moscow hopes to use the meeting between Putin and Xi to strengthen the only remaining bridge it has since its decision to attack Ukraine. For the VOA Moscow Bureau, Marcus Harten, VOA News.
The Biden administration is calling for restraint as fighting on the border between Armenia and Azerbaijan has killed about 100 troops between the two sides. Russia also says it's attempting to broker a truce between the two former Soviet countries. Ben Dubow is a non-resident fellow for Democratic Resilience at the Center for European Policy Analysis.
Yeah, so, you know, whenever you have a conflict, just creates a huge amount of uncertainty on how things will progress. The timing of this is particularly relevant for understanding larger impacts for Europe with Russia not only being bogged down over the past 6 months, but coming right on the heels of the major counteroffensive in Kharkiv. Russia really put its weight behind ensuring this peace that they brokered back in 2020, deploying 5,000 peacekeeping troops to the region. Armenia is a member of CSTO and actually currently the head of CSTO, Nikol Pashinyan, the prime minister of Armenia, actually kind of threw all of his weight behind Russia earlier this year in the intervention in Kazakhstan. So in a lot of ways, the peace treaty was underwritten by Russian security guarantees, and now those are really exposed. So Armenia made a request earlier today for actual Russian intervention, but this is occurring at a time when there's the risk that Russia presents itself as a paper tiger and some of the smaller players on Russia's peripheries no longer have the fear of Russian intervention that they used to. The regime in Moscow very much bases not only its domestic power, but its international power on this idea that they respond decisively to any challenges to their power.
You mentioned, you know, the possibility of parties seeking Russian intervention and some calling into question how effective that could be. Moscow has said that they are perhaps looking at trying to rebroker the peace between the two warring sides. But it's also coming at a time when the Kremlin says that they see no point in having conversations with Kyiv to end the conflict there. So on a geopolitical, you know, stage, what do you see this in terms of having implications not only for Europe, but for Russia?
Yeah, I mean, so Russia has a very strong interest in finding a peace deal here very quickly. So again, Armenia is a member of the CSTO. Russia is treaty bound to come to their defense in the case of an invasion. Obviously, there's a lot of kind of wiggle room for them. What actually counts as an invasion. Russia did not intervene in 2020. So Russia really does want to make sure that this doesn't spiral out of control. It represents not only kind of a geopolitical humiliation for them that their guarantees of peace are not being upheld, but also represents a real challenge to one of their treaty allies. So Russia finding at a time, too, when they're really not in a position to be deploying troops beyond their border outside of just Ukraine.
Ben Dubo is a non-resident fellow for Democratic Resilience at the Center for European Policy Analysis. Ben, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
In what he calls his humanitarian travels, American Neil Bailey has been riding his motorcycle around Ukraine, not only to see the sights, but also to bring attention to the war and to raise funds for the children that he's meeting along the way. Omelian Ostruliak shares this story to round us out.
This is Pamir, an abandoned Soviet-era radar station in the Carpathian Mountains of Ukraine, at an altitude of 1,565 meters. Traveler and reporter Neil Bailey and photographer Kieran Ridley tackled 15 kilometers of challenging mountain road to see this Cold War era installation.
Growing up as kids with the Cold War, you know, we always had the, you know, the nuclear threat and, you know, spies and Reds under the bed, and it was, you know, it was very much my generation.
Built in the 1960s as an air defense station, these five domes now stand as a reminder of Russia's ambitions.
The last attempts by the Soviets to do something, you know, now Russia's doing it again, and it's a different, you know, is someone going to stand on a memorial 40 years from now to this war?
Bailey and Ridley have ridden more than 7,000 kilometers in Ukraine. They have passed through checkpoints, crossed steppe roads in the south, and gone off-road in the Carpathians.
Definitely the motorcycle helps. It really breaks down barriers and is a good icebreaker. I think you get better access, actually, because people are intrigued straight away. What's this hairy English guy doing on a motorbike?
To better understand this,
Bailey lives in the US and works closely with the Barber Motorsports Museum in Birmingham, Alabama. He knows his way around a motorcycle.
I'm Neil Bailey, motorcycle journalist and philanthropic adventure traveler.
Bailey has been traveling the world on motorcycles for over 20 years, raising funds for charity through his non-profit Wellspring International Outreach Foundation. Ukraine is the 56th country he visited on his bike.
These experiences allowed us to see something completely different. I wasn't watching this on social media and the news before I came.
In over 4 weeks, the two men talked to miners and fishermen. They have visited the speedway tracks and the bombed-out motorcycle track in Bucha. They have met farmers near Odessa and soldiers undergoing rehabilitation near Lviv. They talked with children who found refuge in a monastery and met patients at the children's hospital.
Ukraine's quite a special place, I think, and the people really shine through.
Vinnytsia was the toughest stop on their trip. Bailey and Ridley arrived 3 hours after Russian missiles hit the city center, killing dozens of civilians.
You just think, these poor people had no chance. It's just like we're standing here right now. That's what it is. And how do we look at that? How do we reconcile that in our minds?
Bailey says he wants the world to see what he sees, because he says once you see it, it's impossible to ignore. Omelian Ostruliak for VOA News, Ukraine.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage, not only on Ukraine, but on news and events around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media feeds. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team here at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.